Chapter 1. My first introduction to Chief Judge Belvin Perry. I had worked for a few respectable chief judges, such as Judge Stroker and Judge Coleman, both of whom I still believe are the essence of what a chief judge should be. Therefore, I never gave it much thought when Belvin Perry Jr. became the next Ninth Circuit's chief judge. Naive me thought that all chief judges were made from this noble caliber of incorruptible and ethical elected officials. After all, how could they have reached this level of power without being principled and virtuous? Looking back at that time, I was idealistic. I thought if you did your job well, then things would work out. Your kids would grow up and send money home. Not, and life would be sweet. My first introduction to Belvin Perry was both startling and eye-opening and forever changed me and my family's entire life. I don't think I'll ever trust another person again. A K.A., Jezebel worked for me as a system analyst, and one day she poked her head into my office and informed me that our new chief judge, Belvin Perry, had called her to come up to his office. My subdued alert response clicked up a few notches because I had a support department that handled problem calls from court judges. There was never a reason for someone who worked in systems to ever be in front of any judge. System staff performed behind-the-scenes work. They solved systemic global infrastructure issues. However, dumbass me didn't put two and two together, because flowers were growing in my garden and life was pretty damn good. Keeping that nuance in mind, I wasn't aware how much time Jezebel and my new Chief Judge Perry had been spending together, or how much horseshit was going to soon fill my garden and kill every living thing in it. About 20 minutes later, one of my staff members, a black employee named AKA Eddie, who also worked in my systems department, was called on his direct line by Chief Judge Belvin Perry. Without a reason or pretense, Perry asked Ed to come up to his office. Again, none of our judges had ever called systems people directly. Ed had never even met Perry. A judge, judicial assistant, or court administration staff who was experiencing a computer problem would call or email my support staff. Support would work through the issue, and then if it appeared to be a system issue, support would escalate the issue up to systems. My system engineers would typically fix the issue in the background, and my support team would call the user and ask if their problem was resolved. System staff never had a need to visit any user's office, let alone a chief judge. With that said, of course, Ed went up after being summoned by the new chief judge. About 10 minutes later, Ed came back and perched exasperated in my doorway and said,
"I will never go up to Judge Perry's office again."
Not understanding why Ed would be so upset, I asked, "What are you talking about?" Ed said,
"Jezebel was in his office and Perry's hands were all over her."
I asked, "What do you mean all over her?" Ed said, pantomiming with his hands as if he were rubbing oil into an invisible form,
"Like all over her, like everywhere. He was sitting in his big office chair, and Jezebel was standing next to him, and his hands were working all up and down her body. It was so creepy. It was as if he was trying to intimidate me, or maybe impress me, but certainly trying to demean me in some demented way."
Ed tried to collect his thoughts, then added,
"It was as if Perry was trying to prove that a powerful black man could do whatever he wanted, and someone like me, a black man who was not a chief judge, could never get away with this. This.
And Ed fumbled for the words before deciding on
exhibition.
Ed caught his breath, then continued,
"Yeah, that's what this was. It was an exhibition of Perry's perceived power. If he wanted to impress me, then he failed. If he wanted to demean me as a black man, then he also failed. If he wanted to disgust me, then he definitely hit that nail on the head."
Ed was too worked up to sit, so he continued to stand in my doorway and I asked, "What are you gonna do if Perry requests you go to his office again?" Ed said,
"Tell him I went home sick, because if I have to go through that again, I will be sick. He's a sick fuck."
I did my best to acknowledge what I'd heard and tried to convey to Ed that understood his issue and told him, "I'll talk to the court administrator about it." Ed huffed,
"Yeah, right. Good luck on that."
And turned on his heel and went back to his office. Why was it that I felt Ed knew more about the inner workings of court admin than did I? Jezebel didn't come back to the office for over an hour, and when she did, she was really puffed up. She smiled and told support.
Sorry I was gone so long. I had to fix a problem for Chief Judge Perry.
It came across to my staff as pure, unfettered arrogance, as if my support staff was incapable of fixing an issue for Perry. Therefore, Jezebel had to go to the rescue. Later that day, I went up to court administration, closed the door behind me, and spoke with the current court administrator. I informed him what Ed had reported had taken place in Perry's office, and I will never forget his response. But now that I've been enlightened for 30 years, it makes total sense. The court administrator said, "Okay, we'll make a note of it." What he didn't say is, A, he was going to do something about it. B, he was going to talk to Perry about it. Or even C, he was going to talk to human resources about it. Man, I was as naive as a baby mouse that had been dropped into a snake pit. And in order to keep my job, I was forced to remain in that same state of anxiety for the next 30 years. During the year that followed, Jezebel spent more and more time away from her desk and in Perry's chambers. Court admin staff, who worked in the civil courthouse building, mentioned to me on many occasions that Jezebel was spending a lot of time in Perry's office, and no one could understand why. Really? I guess Perry must be an ordained minister to have a 20-some attractive female court admin employee in his office continually without any hanky-panky taking place. After Ed's report, I knew why. And I assumed that everyone in court admin knew why she was spending so much time with Perry. What I failed to take into account is how this fact would affect the management of my staff. It would be like trying to untangle a slinky. Systems and support also noticed that Jezebel was seldom around, and when she was in her office, she did no work and talked on the phone. She began to come in late, sometimes not at all, and left early. I felt this situation was something that I should address before it became more of a departmental problem. Therefore, I called Jezebel into my office. She sat across from my desk with a bemused expression on her face, as if she had her finger on a button that could put me to death with a single twitch of her wrist. I began with, "I noticed that you are away from your desk a lot. Do you understand that systems works behind the scenes and support fields user problems?" Jezebel smiled. A smile of someone who both hates you and knows your car is on fire in the parking lot. And I'll never forget what she said. Jezebel said,
"Belvin and I are personal friends. And if Belvin requests my assistance, then who am I to tell him no? After all, he's the chief judge and can request anyone he wants to help solve his computer problems."
This was really disturbing because there is an unwritten law that court admin staff does not fraternize with judges. Judges hang out with judges. Judicial assistants hang out with other JAs. It was unheard of that a young female court admin employee was the personal friend of the 50-year-old chief judge. I mean, how does that even happen? Based on this unwritten law, there would be no legitimate reason for this friendship to take place, let alone grow into what it had apparently become. I asked Jezebel, "What are you doing for the chief when you are up in his office? I mean, we have a fully staffed support department." I didn't realize that my question could be interpreted in a sexual context because I was focused on computer issues. Jezebel issued yet another belittling smile and said,
"That's between me and the chief."
And right there, I knew I was totally screwed. I quickly ended the conversation and Jezebel went back to her office. Before the day was over, Perry called me and asked me to come up to his chambers. I made sure my tie was straight, left the criminal building, and walked half a block to the civil building where Perry's office was located. I sat outside in his JA's office and could see Perry pecking away with his two fingers at his keyboard. His JA stuck her head into his office and announced my presence. Perry nodded his head and let me sit there for another 20 minutes before he allowed me the ultimate honor of entering his chambers. Of course, I knew what this was about, and yet I also didn't know what this was about. More to the point, I knew that Jezebel had called Perry about our meeting. That's why I was there. I thought it would go one of two ways. Either Perry would tell me he was personal friends with Jezebel and I needed to butt out, or who knows. He might tell me that his computer problems were so vast and complicated that he required his own personal systems person at his side at all times. It was all up in the air as to which way this would play out. All that shit was going through my head when Perry handed me a folder. Still, on my mental back foot, I opened it and began to look over the contents. Perry explained,
That's a folder of the pens and pencil invoices that court admin has ordered over the years. A little bird told me that there is a lot of stealing of office supplies going on around here.
I just looked at him, perplexed and not really sure where this was going. But so far, it was going directly downhill or maybe even off a cliff, depending on the projected trajectory. The little bird expression Perry used would become a monogram of his 20 years as our circuit's chief judge. By the time he left office, I must have heard thousands of little birdies fluttering around the court. In this instance, however, I knew the little bird was Jezebel, and I had nothing to do with the invoices I was staring at. Then Perry let the other shoe drop. He said,
I want you, Brett, to do a complete inventory of the pens and pencils being used in court admin. Of course, you can leave the judges and JAs out of this inventory, because I'm certain my brethren aren't responsible for the theft.
I was so taken aback that I didn't even know how to respond to this assignment. Before I said anything, I began running such a task through my brain, trying to figure out how I would go about inventorying pens and pencils. Should I knock on a court employee's office door with a court deputy at my side and tell them they had to leave their office until it was fully searched for pens and pencils? Would a court order be necessary? Would deadly force be necessary? Would we have to drag the reluctant employee from their office and pry the pen they were using out of their concrete hand? Heck, it might require multiple search warrants in order to visit each of their homes and see just how corrupt these pencil thieves actually were. Perry must have sensed both my myth and confoundment of his assignment. I started to say something, but Perry cut me off, telling me,
I expect results. This theft has to stop. If you can't get it done, I'll let you go and get someone who can get to the bottom of this.
In my befuddled mind, for some reason, it apparently didn't matter to Perry that I was a chief technology officer and not a PI, a pencil investigator. I had absolutely no experience tracking down rogue pencils. Maybe I could take a class, possibly attend a seminar that pertained to office supply inventory techniques and anti-theft measures. But what struck directly in the brain box and fully brought me back to the here and now was Perry's inference that he would fire me if I couldn't adequately fulfill this bizarre assignment. I had been officially and mentally stunned into silence. While I sat there with Perry waiting for me to respond to his insane chore, I realized that this was a military type of punishment, where some officer has a private move rocks from one pile to another and then move them back. Of course, there was no way to inventory pens and pencils, and if there was, how much of the taxpayers' money was going to be spent on such an investigation? I was a relatively new CTO, but I was still one of the highest paid employees in the circuit. I was certain a single day of my salary would buy the court all the pens and pencils those no-good corrupt lead and ink pirates could liberate. Those bastards! Finally, Perry asked,
Do you have any questions?
I snapped out of my, How the fuck do I respond to this insanity? Thought process, and only asked one question. How long do I have to complete this task? Perry appeared as though he hadn't expected that question, and after a moment of contemplation, he came back with,
I think a month would be reasonable. That's all?
Perry said.
Make sure it's done right.
I got to my feet and left his office. I went straight to the court administrator and explained what had just happened. I told my court administrator that I thought this was a retaliatory response to my meeting with his girlfriend, Jezebel. The court administrator listened patiently and attentively to every word, nodding his head as I explained the monumental pen and pencil task that was set before me. When I had finally run out of words, the court administrator said, Well, you better get to it. My brain barked out, Holy shit, aren't you hearing a goddamn thing I just told you? However, my mouth only responded with the phrase, Oka. Almost in a dreamlike state, I made my way back to the office. It had rained, and Jezebel had recently traded me for my parking spot under a tree. She didn't know why I had traded her a prime spot covered by a thick tree in the court parking lot. I don't know how it is where you live, but in Florida, shade from the sun could be sold by the square foot. It brought to mind a challenge I had issued to a used car salesman as I was looking over his inventory. The salesman saw me eyeing a nice black car. He said, I'll give you a great deal on that vehicle. I shrugged and said, Black cars are way too hot in Florida, They're like twice as hot inside as a white car. He said, I don't know where you got that information, but that's not the case. I respond with, if you can put your hand on that car and keep it there for 10 seconds, I will not only buy it at your asking price, but I'll give twice the price you're asking for it. Up front, I knew how hot the surface of the car was. I had been checking it out and had touched my forearm to the surface. I jumped back like the fucking thing was on fire. No problem, the salesman said, and without hesitation, he placed his hand on the hood of the car and began counting to 10. I had to smile. There was no avoiding it. This guy was either made of asbestos or was going to prove to be a flesh and bone human being. However, there are extreme medical conditions where some people have no pain nerves, but that is very rare. And between you and me, I'll take a rare bet every now and then. The guy tried not to show any pain. He even smiled a little for the first 4 seconds. As I'm writing this interaction, I Googled how hot a black car surface can get in Florida, and the figure is 150 degrees Fahrenheit. The guy probably sustained first-degree burns and didn't last more than 6 seconds. So when Jezebel traded me for my spot under the tree, she was hoping it would keep her car from cooking in the Florida sun. After coming back from Perry's office, I smiled because Jezebel's car was absolutely covered in bird shit. I had discovered after months of parking under the tree that this particular tree was the favorite perch for the hugest shitting birds in the world. Unless it rained, then you were good and your car would stay cool under the tree. However, for this particular tree with these particular turd birds, when it rained, pounds of bird shit that was stuck to the limbs and leaves dissolved and dropped down to the car below. From the factory, Jezebel's car was painted black, but on that day, after that rain, it was completely white. It made me smile, almost as if some supreme being had witnessed my meeting with Perry and had interceded and covered Jezebel's car with a thick layer of lumpy white crap. Perry's favorite phrase, a little bird told me, had just dropped an atomic bomb of bird shit on Jezebel's car. Even though this gave me mere moments of pure joy, by the time I made it back up to my office, I was lost in assessing the value of my job. I tried to understand what was going on. I'm a computer guy. Now I'm a pencil investigator. When I accepted the gig, this pen and pencil thing was not part of my job description. What to do? What to do? And it was at this unique moment in time that I realized that all my expert computer skills meant nothing to Perry. Therefore, I had zero leverage. How do you protect your job when your skills are meaningless to your employer? In the future, I would come to realize that my skills meant nothing to most of the future chief judges. I might as well have been a pastry chef. Perry could replace me in a matter of minutes, and he wouldn't give it another thought. Hell, he could replace me with Jezebel, yet my entire staff would have quit. Perry, however, had an intrinsic way of understanding just how far he could go. He understood that the entire IT department resigning might raise a stink that even the most incompetent Ninth Circuit judge could smell. He was a power-mad chief judge that knew he could do whatever he wanted. Fuck around with female court administration employees, no problem. Tell the court's CTO to go on pencil patrol, not an issue. Tell the court administrator and the human resource department to pound sand, that worked. For Perry, it was all good. He reminded me of the Mel Brooks movie, History of the World 1981, where the king buried his face in a woman's cleavage, then turned to look at the camera and said, "It's good to be the king." Perry knew no one in court administration had the balls to call him out on his vile actions. And this ball-less response from court administration went on for more than 20 years. This is a nuance that you really need to understand, and this is no bullshit or embellishment. A Florida chief judge can walk into your office, and using a chair to climb up onto your desk, the chief judge could bare his or her ass and take a shit on your desk, and there is nothing you can do about it. Court administration has no mechanism to deal with a desk-shitting chief judge. There is no higher entity to which to report them. And if there was, you would never work in the Florida court system again. Once exposed as a desk-shitting chief judge ratfink, no Florida circuit would ever employ you because you're ratted out a chief judge, desk-shitting aside. The one thing I fully understood at the time of my pencil investigation was that I could never again tell Jezebel to do a goddamn thing, as long as Perry was the chief judge. Perry had made that perfectly clear. If I attempted to manage her, There were also staplers and those weird jaw things that remove staples. That might be my next inventory assignment. Yet, that really didn't change the situation I was in. I had to locate all the pens and pencils in the court, or Perry would fire me. Man, oh man, how the hell do you explain this to your wife? My wife was flabbergasted as I tried to explain the situation I was facing. Of course, being a logical person, she began the logical solution process that there must be something I could do to protect my job and my family's future. Our conversation went something like this. My wife said,
"Did you report Perry to your court administrator?"
"Yeah," I said grimly.
"Well, what did he say?"
Huffing out a depleted breath, I responded, "He said I should get busy on the pen and pencil project." She said,
"That's it."
I said, "What do you expect? The guy is trying to keep his job like I am." She stammered for a moment and stated,
"There has to be someone higher you can report this to. There has to be a way that you can keep your job by simply doing a great job."
I shook my head as if I had already lost the war and said, "That's not the way the court system works. The chief judge is as high as you can go. Anyone higher than that doesn't exist in the court world." Now my wife was getting pissed. Based on my new job and salary at the court, we had just bought a new home and had a newborn that was getting ready to make an appearance. She was freaking out, and I couldn't blame her. I had done nothing wrong, yet I could be fired at any moment. Her voice cranked up a few decibels, and she said,
"This is just total bullshit. How can a man like this become the chief judge of a major court system?"
I didn't have an answer. 30 years later, I still have no logical answer. Almost every night, we replayed the same conversation. Same topic, same non-resolution. It put a huge strain on a new marriage that didn't need the tension. Whose does? For the following decades, the pervasive anxiety consumed us like a thick cloud of lethal radiation. It seemed like it would never end. We didn't know if I would last long enough under Perry's rule to qualify for Florida state retirement. What would happen to our health insurance? My gig could all end at any moment, and then what? In response to Perry's pencil project, during the next 2 weeks, I made a list of every court administration employee and put that list into a database. Next, based on their job titles and perceived wages, I placed weights on each employee, where the employees who made the most amount of money were weighted more than line-level employees. I then researched the invoices, looking up the pens and pencils in a paper catalog. Yeah, this was before the internet. I then made another list of every type of pencil and every brand of pen that was listed in the invoices, as well as each unit's price. Some of the boxes of pens were more high-end than other generic types, so I weighted those items as well, giving them a higher priority than the more common pens. Once I was happy with my data, I entered it all into my database. Once I was happy with the estimated importance of employees in contrast to the price of pens and pencils, I began to write code. It took me a few weeks of spending most of the day writing, then debugging my code and until I was pleased with the results. The final output of my program listed every model of pen and pencil and who they were assigned to based on the importance of the employee. Those who made more money had more high-end pens, and those who were basically court administration regulars had more pencils and low-end pens. But what was beautiful is every single pen and pencil was accounted for and listed under each employee's name. Of course, this was all complete bullshit. I had never visited anyone's office and had never inventoried a goddamn pencil or pen. However, the list my code created was very compelling. In order to prove me wrong, another entire inventory of pens and pencils would have to be conducted by someone other than me. I seriously doubted that Perry would assign Jezebel to the task. I emailed the complete inventory list to Perry, and I never heard a word back from him. Apparently, he was either very pleased with me moving rocks from one pile to another, or had made up his mind that he had proved his point. And he had. After that month of not knowing if I was going to be working at the court for another day, month, or year, I rarely interacted with Jezebel. His didn't go over well with my staff. My system's staff had to make up for Jezebel never being in the office. They had to take over her assignments to keep the court IT department functioning. But even this turned into a total nightmare because if Jezebel felt that another system staff member was trying to take over her job, then she would complain to Perry and I would go through yet another moving rocks chore. I don't know how many times Perry made me do months of ridiculous assignments. It seemed like hundreds, but each time it transpired, I almost accepted that this was my new job. I was no longer a CTO. I was Chief Judge Perry's slave, which to abuse. Plain and simple. My female support staff resented the fact that since Jezebel was fucking the chief, she didn't have to even come to work. I felt bad for them. They had every right to be totally pissed off. Since they were not fucking the chief, they had to come to work every day and were actually expected to earn their salary. How crazy is that? I mean, what do you do in that situation? It took me a long time to progress from a mainframe computer operator to becoming a systems analyst to then becoming the Ninth Circuit Court's chief technology officer. Similar to Perry, I had finally made it. Unlike Perry, I was still an absolute nothing to those in power, and it really didn't matter what I achieved during my time as a court CTO. I could shoot diamonds out of my ass and onto the chief judge's desk. Yet if I made his girlfriend do anything, even engaged in a conversation with her, then I was gone. I didn't know if I could keep my staff glued together. We had never run into an issue where a chief judge was overtly protecting his girlfriend and in turn jeopardizing court admin staff who had been working at the court for most of their adult lives. At that moment in time, I had a newborn, and my wife had quit her job to stay home with the baby. Then there was the stigma of getting fired. That was an ugly way to start a new job interview. You see, other employers believe that you have to do something nefarious to get fired. What doesn't compute to prospective employers was that a Florida chief judge could fire you because he smelled a fart in the elevator and therefore assumed it was me. Maybe it would be better to have committed a felony, served my time, and was now looking for employment as a felon instead of a fired employee. At least that's a straightforward and understandable situation. I never wanted to be in that position. The getting fired thing. Therefore, I went along with the program that was being laid out by the leader of court administration. My first court administrator protected the judiciary at any cost, and most importantly, the chief judge. This protection blanket resumed when my first court administrator took another job and was replaced by my second court administrator. We'll get to more about this new guy later, but the takeaway from this chapter is while Perry was the chief judge, I could walk into work and be fired without ever doing anything wrong. I had worked enough other jobs to know that typically you had to completely bone something to get ejected, but in the Florida court system, you can be fired by the chief judge because he or she was having a bad day. And if Jezebel was having a bad day, then everyone, but mostly me and my department, was having a really bad fucking day. I try to think back to that time when I decided not to quit. And what comes to mind is, I was playing a waiting game. In the back of my mind, I thought that Perry would be replaced by another chief judge in the near future, and Jezebel would lose her protector. Why does that make a difference? Because a chief judge is the only person who can fire you. To make that happen, if Perry was no longer the chief judge, he would need to convince the new chief judge to fire me over his Jezebel situation. I didn't see that happening, so all I had to do was hang in there until that piece of shit Perry was gone. I never thought in a million years that this particular sexist peccary would be the chief for the next 20 years. After each election cycle, I would convince myself, okay, not now, but next chief judge vote, I will get a new respectable chief judge. And believe it or not, things for me and my staff got much, much worse over those years of Perry's leadership. Talk about a total brain fuck.